it's hard to sort of look at this player and project him as sort of the above average to plus hitter that, you know, we had expected him to be, and he kind of showed to be early on in his professional career.
Hot Sheet is here. Scotty Braun along with Baseball America's J.J. Cooper, but it is four hosts to start the show because Carlos Collazo and Jacob Rudner are here as we are going to go over mock draft 3.0 as we are. Do you know the days? Do you keep track of the days, Carlos, or is that too aggressive to ask you that?
I think we're basically exactly 2 months out from the draft right now, so about 60 or so.
There you go. Okay. 2 months away from the next MLB draft, which will be in Atlanta the Sunday before the All-Star game. So let's hit our first move and dive into the 3.0. Meep, meep. All right, Carlos, let's start at the top. What do you got?
Yeah, so we got a new name here at the top. Third name for our third in-season mock draft of this year's class. I don't want to push any more confidence than I really have at the 1-1 spot in this year's mock, or this edition. It's Ethan Holliday. He's kind of been in the mix every single time we've run out of mock draft. I believe we've mentioned him every single time at the top. He's been the top high school player in the class for several years now. It's more the case of when I ask teams who are picking behind the Nationals, okay, do you guys have like a bucket of players that you don't expect to get to you? For the most part, the answer is no. Everyone is scouting everyone still, but Ethan Holliday's name does come up most frequently when teams who are a few picks behind the Nationals, they're like, yeah, we really don't expect him to slide. So it's partially just he seems like the player least likely to fall down the board in any capacity. He still has some of the biggest offensive upside in the class. He's also got pretty good reviews for his defensive work at shortstop this spring, which was a big question for his profile. But I would still say at the end of the day, the Nationals have a really wide net right now. If anything, there seem to be more players in consideration for one than in our last mock 4 weeks ago. I would have said it was like an 8-player field. I think it's even more names who realistically have a chance to go 1-1. I don't think the Nationals have really winnowed that down at all at this point, and it's going to come down to the wire for them.
That just feels to me like that normally by this point, I feel like that we've kind of the funnel's narrowed a little bit. It's pretty unusual, isn't it, that we're kind of sitting here 2 months away from the draft, pretty much at nearly the end of the regular season for college baseball, at the end of the season for some high school teams. And it feels like, if anything, it's getting broader, not narrower at the top of the list.
It definitely is. I've been asking this to every team I talk to, essentially, like, hey, do you guys have a group of players? Can you eliminate anyone? Are you narrowing your field at all? And it's been no. Like, I think these teams really wish they could. It's just the field is as muddled, and at the lack of separation from the top players is as little as we've seen in years. I had one longtime scout who told me the separation in this year's class was as little as he can remember. I do think, like, for teams picking at the top, they would really like to focus their resources and focus their looks with their higher ups running in to get cross checks and really dive deep on players. They would like for that player group to be smaller than it is. I know they're kind of running ragged at this point, and typically around this time in May, you would cut that field down. You would have hopefully 5-4 players that you're really focusing in on. There's just not that much separation of talent this year, which means you really had to cast a wide net. A lot of the performances down the wire, I think specifically with these college pitchers, that a core of them are moving up in this year's mock draft. What they do entering in conference play into the postseason could really have big time ramifications for where they're going in the draft.
So, Carlos, to me, that sounds like we could have some money cuteness towards the top of the draft, where you try and target someone later on and save up some cash. You know how I feel about that. If you have a guy that you feel like has even a slight edge and it is a top tier pick, I personally have a problem there, because what happens is if you're really close between 1 and 2, but you decided to save money on the guy that you think is second best on your board, one could still turn into a superstar and the other could turn into nothing. So I do think we're still dealing with top end talent, right? I don't know. This always, to me, kind of grinds my gears when we say that it's close. I'm okay with that. I'm just saying I hope that it doesn't result in teams getting cute with money. And it's not a money saving thing, because you're still using that money in the draft. So I'm not calling out teams for being cheap. I'm calling out teams for, you know, putting numbers in a computer system saying, well, we've got our evaluation so close that we should save this money to try and bank on someone a little bit later on in the draft that we might not be able to afford with our bonus pool money. to me, that drives me nuts because I'm like, this is your opportunity as a team to be mm-hmm. able to select a top end pick. You don't know when you're going to get that again, and you might still select a superstar.
Right. Well, I think this year's draft is your worst nightmare, Scott, because I do think all of the ripples of the draft, everything that goes into it is lining up for there to be a lot of deal cut scenarios. If you think that the difference between prospect number 1 and 2 on your board is not all that different from prospects number 12, 13, 14, which this year, more than any other year in recent memory, I think is actually the case. If teams really are having a lot of internal battles, one scout in the room prefers this player, another scout prefers this player, the model prefers another player. I think teams like are pretty humble about the fact that they really don't have a lot of confidence in who is the guy. They would love for a guy to be up there that they feel really confident about. And I think if there were, the Nationals of all teams would feel pretty comfortable just going up there and giving that player the biggest bonus and then moving on to their next pick. It's just that guy hasn't made himself known in this year's class. I mean, to me, I think Ethan Holliday, Seth Hernandez, Eli Willis are the top pure talents. But there's a case to be made for these college arms and maybe Ivar Arquette on the college hitting side as well.
All right, let's step aside for a quick moment and get to more of the college arms. Jacob will come in strong right after this.
This is a straightforward show, so I'm going to be very straightforward with everyone about PXG. Fastest way to improve your performance on the golf course is to get yourself a PXG golf fitting. Go in there and let the experts help you.
I've been using PXG for a few years now, Scotty. They are perfect. I love the way they feel. They fit them perfectly to my swing. They weighted them. They put grips in them. They put shafts in them. They use their heads, and they fit my swing beautifully. They have definitely improved my game. They just recently hooked me up with their new Allen putter, which is off the chain. I was draining putts the other day, left and right. So I definitely say, go get your fitting at PXG. Nobody goes golf the way PXG does.
Yes, and for a limited time, you could save up to 20% on your entire order. Head over to pxg.com/foul. That's pxg.com/FOUL to save up to 20% on your entire order. pxg.com/foul. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Okay, Jacob, take over. Let's talk college arms for a moment. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I think part of what Carlos said is accurate with the arms too. There's a lot of uncertainty about who belongs where if you're going to tier these guys out and try and rank them. I mean, for us, we've had Jamie Arnold towards the top of our draft board, and I think that there's a lot of good reason for that. He's arguably your most consistent, maybe sure thing, if you want to call him that, prospect in this draft on the mound, at least on the college side. But then you have guys like Liam Doyle, who are, you could label him the most dominant arm in college baseball this season. Probably the best fastball in at that level. He's been dominant statistically speaking. Are there concerns about what he is at the next level? Sure. He's throwing 70% fastballs. No other pitch in his arsenal gets more than 10% usage. So he's an interesting guy. Cade Anderson is somebody who's probably in that same exact conversation. He's not too far behind Liam Doyle statistically speaking. Has had a huge rise so far this spring. Kyson Witherspoon, the same case. Right-hander from Oklahoma. I think he's kind of in that conversation to maybe be the best overall college pitcher in this draft. But the moral of the story, just like Carlos said with the rest of the group, is we don't really know. And I think that it's kind of up for debate as to who is the best college pitcher available right now.
I want to jump off of that just a little bit, because the other thing that strikes me, we talk about it being this wide open. We just had Cade Horton make his MLB debut this past weekend. And if we would have been doing Hot Sheet, we weren't doing it yet, but if we'd have been doing Hot Sheet a few years ago, his name would not have been someone we'd have mentioned at all at this time in the draft process. When Carlos talks about how there are, you know, there's still a lot to be done. When I look at the college arms, Carlos, this feels like that more than anything. When we say like how some of these guys finish, if a Liam Doyle basically kind of basically carries Tennessee, really good team, but carries them to Omaha, or an Anderson or a Witherspoon, these guys, if someone really kind of steps up over the final month of this college season, I feel like there's kind of a lot still to be written and a lot of scouting still to be done.
There definitely is. I talked to an evaluator last week who said basically we are a what have you done for me lately industry. And I think that is very much the case on the draft side. Recent outings and outings under the spotlight with a lot of scouting heat in the postseason tournament, they carry a lot of weight. And I think even if you're looking at a more bigger picture look at their entire careers, these individual outings that these college pitchers are stacking do carry a lot of weight. You can look at their overall profiles and they can change pretty significantly with one really strong outing or one really bad outing. And the way Jacob laid it out, I think is perfect. I mean, all these guys, the four he mentioned, are very much in a top tier. If you want upside and outlier traits, go for Liam Doyle. If you want to feel secure with a track record, go for Jamie Arnold. If you want big power fastball velocity and maybe a more prototypical sort of starting pitcher at this range, you can go for Kyson Witherspoon. If you want the sort of classic projection body, clean delivery with a now breaking ball, Cade Anderson is your guy. And I think to your point about Horton, there are a few players, a few pitchers who are kind of lurking behind this group. I don't think they're right in it right now. All the pitchers I just mentioned, we have between 4 and 8 in our latest mock. I think all of them are getting a lot of top 10 buzz. Don't forget about Tyler Bremner at UC Santa Barbara. I mean, he has not had the most dominant season the season scouts wanted him to have. But if you look up now, I think 4 of his last 5 outings, he struck out 10 or more batters. He's sitting around 96 with the fastball. His changeup is maybe the best secondary pitch of any of the pitchers we're talking about here. And then Riley Quick at Alabama is a guy who's really surging lately. He does not have the same statistical resume as some of the other pitchers in this class. He doesn't have the same innings background that some of the other pitchers in this class have. But he has massive physicality. He's got a fastball that's sitting consistently in the 96 to 99 mile per hour range. And I think if he gets hot and strikes out a few more batters in his last few starts, he could be in this conversation as well. So it's really going to come down to the wire. It's kind of like dealer's choice here. What are your preferences? But these guys, there's not a lot of separation. I go back and forth. I was asking Jacob before this, who would you take? And I think every week I kind of change my mind and I'm moving from player to player and weighing the pros and cons. So it is difficult, but it's going to be fun to see who kind of gets to the lead of this pack, if anyone does.
The point that Carlos just made there with Bremer, like I can't help but think about the fact that if we had the draft at the start of the season, Bremer would have probably been the second college arm off the board, maybe, you know, in consideration for the first. And Jacob, if we had it halfway through the season, he would have been not even, he'd kind of been moving more back to the middle of the first round. Is he kind of the surging candidate here? The guy who has kind of rewrited the ship for himself after a little bit of a discouraging start to the season?
Well, if we're going to look back at what Carlos just said, then I think certainly it's a what have you done for me lately industry. And Tyler Bremner has been very good lately. He struck out 61 batters over his last 36 and a third innings. Carlos mentioned the stuff. He's got a plus changeup. He's got a slider that's shown the capability of being above average consistently at times. His fastball's got velocity. He's a guy who's been dominant in the past. So he has the track record. Now we're starting to see the results that I think we expected earlier on. And that could for sure push him up higher into the first round than where we have him in our latest mock draft. I think that this is a guy who, you know, it was a results-based tumble that happened earlier in the season. And so if he's able to close out the year strong, which he's been doing recently, yeah, I think that there are a lot of things going for him that could make a team want to jump back on board pretty quick.
Jacob, Carlos, great chatting. Back to mock draft 4.0 work. We will talk when that comes out, but appreciate the time, guys. We'll talk soon.
Yep. See you guys.
Thank you. See ya. And of course, baseballamerica.com. Get yourself a subscription. It is the best draft coverage out there. So they're all over it the next couple months. JJ, before we bring in our friend Jeff, Jordan Lawler gets called up by the Arizona Diamondbacks. And this isn't his MLB debut. He was called up in 2023. He was part of the playoff roster, even though he didn't get much playing time. A lot of injuries have hit him since. What are your thoughts now? I know you chimed in a little bit on foul territory as well. We talked about Cade Horton, but what are your thoughts on Jordan Lawler now getting called up to a Diamondbacks team that technically doesn't have a full-time spot for him, but you're looking at the clock like it's time.
The main thing is he's healthy. That's kind of the important thing, because that's been the biggest problem for Jordan Lawler as a pro, has been he's had multiple times where he's missed significant time with injuries. We thought that we were expecting to say goodbye to Jordan Lawler as a prospect last year, and then his season was wrecked by injuries. I like what the D-backs did here. I like what Lawler did here, which is it's always a good problem to have when you have regulars who are good at every position that you have a shortstop can play. But what they did to kind of work their way around that is they said, hey, Jordan, we want to make sure that you're comfortable at second, you're comfortable at third, and you're comfortable at shortstop. And so he kind of spent that first month of the season showing that he's healthy, hitting, which playing in Reno doesn't hurt for that, but also kind of mastering being able to bounce around the field. He's played multiple positions every week. And so that's how I think they're going to plan to use him, is kind of use him as almost a super sub who plays second and short and third, gives guys day off as they need it. He can DH a little bit as well and can run. He can really figure out a way to carve out, you know, 4 to 5 games a week here. And that's a massive asset for a team, because not only does that kind of make sure that he's contributing, helping deepen out their bench, but on top of that, if someone does go down, you're going to have Lawler already up at the big leagues, kind of ready to plug in at second if Ketel Marte goes back on the IL like he did earlier this year, or at short with Gerard.
Whenever we've needed a new writer here at Baseball America, we've used Indeed. Indeed has helped keep us organized and on track and has provided a wide array of qualified candidates. When we need to hire, Indeed is our partner in finding qualified candidates quickly. When it comes to hiring, Indeed is all you need. Stop struggling to get your jobs post seen on other job sites. Indeed-sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. That's one of the things I love about Indeed. Indeed allows us to not just get qualified candidates, but do it all within the Indeed website. It keeps it organized. I can reach out to people. I can send that follow-up message all within Indeed. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. How fast is Indeed? In the minute I've been talking to you, 23 hires were made on Indeed, according to Indeed data worldwide. There's no need to wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Baseball America. Just go to Indeed.com/Baseball America right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Baseball America. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring, Indeed, is all you need.
Perdomo or at third with Eugenio Suarez. So, yay. You know, it's good to have kind of these are the good problems to have when you're trying to make sure that you can take your top prospect, one of the top prospects in the game, and find a way to get him enough at bats.
And we know he was picked, what, it was 6th overall in the 2021 MLB draft. So take us back. I mean, this could still work out really well, of course, for the Diamondbacks during a draft where people made some pretty big misses early on in that draft.
This is the point you were making earlier. And I say with the Pirates, you know, obviously they took Bubba Chandler with some of the money they saved from Henry Davis. So I would say that they would probably do some of that again as well. But that was a draft that had Jackson Jobe and Marcelo Meyer and Jordan Lawler. It's kind of these three high school guys near the top. All three of those looking, here we are, you know, several years later now, and all of them look like they're paying off pretty well. Jobe is obviously now pretty much already a fixture in the Tigers rotation. Meyer is one of the top prospects in the game, is in AAA, should be up with the Red Sox at some point this year. They've kind of got the same problem that Lawler was facing in Arizona. And here we are with Lawler. That's kind of what you want to hit on, that you can find high ceilings if you take the top high school talents at the top of a draft. We're seeing that with Lawler. We're seeing that with Meyer. This is, you know, it's always great to see young shortstops who, the great thing about them is when you say, oh, you took a shortstop, where is he going to fit? The answer is he's going to fit wherever you need him to, because shortstops can play most anywhere. And we've seen that with the situation like here with Jordan Lawler.
Yeah, hey, just ask the Padres. They've had a million shortstops in their organization in general, and they just kind of go, oh, Jackson Merrill, great athlete. Let's throw him in center field, and he's going to be a stud out there. So anyway, let's get to the top 100. Fresh update for us. Jeff Ponce joining us. The party is back to 3 here. Jeff, good to see you. So give us a little taste of what the update was like.
I think this was an exciting update. I would say that in comparison to maybe past years, with the first in-season update, we were maybe a little bit more aggressive. I think some of that were there were some guys that we kind of held out hope for coming into the season, and things haven't looked good, that kind of moved off the list or moved down the list. Guys graduating, and it's opened up a lot of opportunities for us to move some really intriguing, interesting prospects onto the back end of the list.
I would just add to that one of the things that stands out with this is when we're trying to be aggressive, we talked about Lawler and Meyer and these young shortstops. Well, we are in the age right now. We love to be able to say this. We are in an age of great young shortstop talent in the minors. That's the dream. If you had great first base talent in the minors, you have great corner outfield talent in the minors. That's one thing where you go, okay, I don't know. You know, that's a pretty risky demographic. We have a ton of young shortstops. One of the things that was kind of a challenge here and a fun challenge was, okay, what do you do with these, with the Jesus Mares and the Leo DeVries, Sebastian Walcotts? They're all top 10 prospects now. That is aggressive, but at the same time, I would say that's aggressive, but it also makes sense. We don't want to say that our top 100 prospects list is a trade value chart, but we do think of it a little bit that way, because the way I would put it is, if someone, obviously there are different needs, there are different teams are in different spots, but if someone wanted to trade for Jesus Mare right now or Leo DeVries, it would be that they would need to offer a king's ransom. It would be an exceptional package. And that's one of the things that we're reflecting here when you look at them as top 10 prospects. Why? Because every team out there wants to find the guy who can be a, you know, that 4, 5, 6 war player, can be that player who kind of is a transformative player. You mentioned, Scott mentioned Jackson Merrill and what he's already done for San Diego very quickly for them. When we look at, you know, what an Ellie De La Cruz is doing in Cincinnati, we could go down the list. But Jeff, I do feel like that we have now this core of young shortstops at kind of the top, in the top 25 here, that really stands out and it is unusual compared to the norm.
Yeah, and I think it's top shortstops and guys that have a really good shot of staying at shortstop. And if they move off, it's going to be like second base or third base. They're going to be guys that are going to stay in the infield. There's defensive value, obviously, at both of those positions as well. Not quite as much as shortstop. But they're all shortstops that can play the position, that can all hit. And I think they're well-rounded skill sets. You know, you look at a Sebastian Walcott, and that's potentially a five-tool player. Not sure, you know, Mate is plus across the board in terms of like all of his tools, but, you know, he's certainly a plus runner. The bat to ball skill and approach is plus. You look at the power, it's plus. You look at a Leo DeVries. He might have the best hit tool of that entire group. Is hitting the ball harder, is hitting the ball in the air more consistently than he ever did previously. And then I think you even look at some players that are a little bit further down the list, guys that didn't have an opportunity to move up that potentially could have really moved up had they not been injured. A guy like Kevin McGonigal, who, you know, I know there's some question as to whether he sticks at shortstop or not long-term, probably second base, but is still technically a shortstop, still a really talented player, a guy that could have jumped up. And then you look at, you know, the two guys, a little bit, you know, more older statesmen in that top five that's listed next to me. You have Marcelo Meyer, Jordan Lawler, who you just talked about, both guys really producing in AAA, putting up some of the best underlying data, let alone the slash line numbers and all that of their careers, right on the cusp of the major leagues. And depending upon the situation, you know, Meyer might be up with a lot of teams that are in the big leagues. So, you know, I think you look at this group and it's got a little bit of everything for everyone. And it's also exciting for us because shortstops, you talked about this with the Padres and in the previous segment before I jumped on, shortstops typically can project at a variety of positions throughout the field that hold defensive value. And if they can hit, those are kind of the dream prospects. It's why teams are, you know, are never shy to take a shortstop when they already have a couple maybe in their system who are decent prospects.
So I want to hit Faller's concerns here, other side, right? The glass half empty side of this list, but let's step aside for a quick moment. We'll hear from Hall of Fame Bets and be right back.
FT fam, let's talk about the HOF app. If you're into parlays, but sometimes you're missing the mark more than you would like to, can I introduce you to some serious analytics on an app that is easy to read and comprehend? And I'm sitting next to a man who knows how to place a parlay.
Yeah, and the biggest thing is breaking down a parlay with this Hall of Fame app. There's the situations that you'll find easier to do. It's very helpful and understanding. And if you like, you know, gambling, sometimes this is really good to know. So get on there, get on that Hall of Fame app and check it out.
Yeah, this is info that will help you, okay? With a 4.9 rating in the App Store and over 6,000 five-star reviews, safe to say that HOF has already helped a lot of people bet smarter. For a limited time only, FT listeners can get a 7-day free trial and 50% off their first month when they use code FOUL at checkout. Download the HOF app on iOS or Android. Enter code FOUL and you're all set. All right, we're back. Let's go back to the top 100 list here. Jeff, fallers, concerns, talk to me.
Yeah, I think the biggest name and somebody that we've broken down before, certainly Colson Montgomery, beyond just even the bad performance, it's AAA. All of that data is obviously public, so we have access and we can look at it. Across the board, it's not been great. And I think a lot of the concerns regarding Montgomery and some of the stuff we had heard from scouts, even during the fall league, regarding some of his swing mechanics and things like that, I think, you know, the chickens have sort of come home to roost. And the reality is, at this point, it's hard to sort of look at this player and project him as sort of the above average to plus hitter that, you know, we had expected him to be, and he kind of showed to be early on in his professional career. It's now 2 years that he's really been spiraling in Charlotte. And I think that's, you know, a bit of a concern. Another name that, you know, we can throw out there as well, and I'm sure JJ can talk a little bit more on this one because he's always like to talk some Kumar Rocker, but Kumar Rocker as well is another guy that is fallen as well. And I think, you know, obviously the injuries are a concern. He's had such a checkered injury history dating back to the first time that he was drafted, you know, his time at Vanderbilt and some of the things that have gone on there. He's gone through so many different sort of like renditions of his own mechanics that it's concerning. But I think you also look at the lack of fastball quality outside of just velocity. And I think that's also concerning. So there's some player related stuff that's a concern as well.
I'll throw out one other, which is, you know, you kind of hate to see it, but Kobe Mayo just was back up in the big leagues briefly, and he's back down in AAA. It's now 59 big league plate appearances and an 0.96 average and no extra base hits. Those are the parts that I think are actually, okay, he's had a really rough start in fits and starts of big league time. I think that he's obviously a much better hitter than that. More concerningly, I would say also he had two errors in one of his games at third base. It's kind of been a constant work in progress of trying to improve his defense at first and third base, and there still are issues. And the problem for him at this point is this is multiple years in AAA. The defensive issues remain, and I do think it kind of makes it harder for him to fit with the Baltimore club, you know, which obviously the Orioles could use a boost, but they are pretty crowded in the infield. But it also, if eventually he becomes a trade chip, it also harms him as a trade chip, because this isn't something where you're projecting on a AA guy and saying, okay, you know, the defense isn't there yet, but we figure it'll get better and better. This has been several years now of working on this, and it's still a struggle for him to reliably field, especially at third base. And I think that teams who might consider Mayo in a deal if it ever comes to that part, because he's a little bit blocked, that's a concern for them as well.
Let's get a couple of fan questions in here live in the YouTube chat from Mel. We'll start with Mel. Where does Connor Griffin compare to these guys? Who wants to take this one first?
I'll just take this to say real quick, top 50 prospect. We can't say he's one of the shortstops anymore. Now he's a center fielder. Tools wise, Jeff, I think he compares with almost anyone on here. You know, he's in low A, he's still a little bit further away, but everything is trending in the right direction for Connor, I would say. Is that how you put it?
Yeah, and he's actually playing a majority of his time at shortstop, surprisingly, even though we saw him almost entirely, Josh and myself, in the outfield across several looks during backfield play in spring training. But I think some of that, like, is some of the intrigue with Connor Griffin is, you know, the versatility potentially defensively while being this sort of outlier tooled up, you know, athlete. And, you know, we can look at the spring speeds at that level. We can look at the EVs at that level. I think you also start to look at the plate skills. So the swing decisions have started to get a little bit better over the last couple of weeks. And I think that's something that will only get better as he sees more time. And the end zone whiff rate has actually been really good all year long. So I think that strikeout rate will start to creep down a little bit. And I think that the numbers will jump. And what he's doing in the Florida State League, which is a very hard place to hit for power to begin with, I think is impressive. So for me, I think I'm a little bit higher on Griffin than the rest of the group. But I do think this is a player that could trend that way as a couple of things work in his favor.
Yeah, and that's been the problem for the Pirates. If you shoot it up to the big league club, they're looking for bats. If Griffin hits, they're going to figure out a way to get him up as quickly as possible, because
They don't have the ability to sign players via free agency who are impact bats. That's usually the case, right? They have to be super creative with how they try and fill the void offensively. Best way to do that, draft and develop bats. They've done a pretty nice job on the pitching front lately, but you know, the team still on the major league side is in shambles. So anyway, that's for another show, another podcast. Foul Territory covered that plenty last week when they fired Derek Shelton. Let's get to one more question. Eduardo Quintero, the question on his potential promotion from Mike Phillips in the Dodgers system. JJ?
Can we just work Mike Sirota in that too? Because they have this pair of studs who are really producing, who are basically arguably the best two hitters in the Cal League right now. The problem they have, and this is a Dodgers problem to have, right, is you say, okay, well, why don't they move them up to high A? And it's like, well, it's actually kind of a multifaceted problem, because to move them to high A, you need to then move Jose DePaula or Zahir Hope or Kendall George or both or two of them up to double A, because that's your top 100 prospect, first round caliber prospects all playing on the high A Great Lakes club. So Jeff, you're kind of stuck here. Very good problem. Problem not many organizations have.
This is actually something, as I was writing the Helium player, because we had four Dodgers position players, all outfielders, that were on the hot sheet this week. And our Helium guy was Brendan Tunick, who was an eighth rounder that got an overslot bonus last July. Really talented guy, one of the best athletes in the high school class. And he's in the complex ripping it up. And then I kind of looked at it and I looked at the depth chart and was like, there's honestly no place for him to go. Like until they figure something out at AAA, like they open up a couple of spots there, you know, it's like there's this whole sort of domino effect from the top of their system on down, just because of how ridiculous their depth is. Not only on the positional side, but we've talked for years on how well they've done on the pitching side. So, you know, an embarrassment of riches. It's not just the money. Sometimes it's about how they work it.
Yep. It's the resources and the way that they've set up this organization, because if you go back, 15 years now, the Dodgers are still a very, very big market franchise, and they were kind of a joke for a little bit of time. Frank McCourt was owning the team. So we'll look up that past and how things have changed since, with new ownership group, with Andrew Friedman, the whole deal. They're picking the back end really of the draft in the first round, at least on a year-to-year basis. They don't get the same bonus pool money as many of the other teams we're talking about, and yet still they are loaded. So anyway, we'll call it on that. And I see a lot of questions still flowing through, coming a little sooner into the show, and we'll get to them. I love it, though. I love the energy and the momentum. Bring these next week and we'll get to them. We get to almost every question here on Hot Sheet. Thank you for joining us. Great, great show today, going over the mock draft and then the top 100 update. We'll see you next week.